Now that you've focused on what this limb can do, take control, open your eyes, and look around you, and focus on reaching out to touch things, whatever you want. And as you touch them, think about how they feel on this hand. Spend some time reaching out around you to touch these things and sense how those things feel with this phantom limb. Now that you're done with this, put it away. Point it in front of your chest and slowly telescope it back to where it began. Feel all those sensations in this arm getting closer together as it gets more retracted. Slowly retracting back to a dense point in your chest.
Ich vergesse, oh. Ich vergesse, trees. In my desiring caress, I discover something like a flash of objects. The caress is not simply a stroking, it is a shaping. Some of my favorite things with me that I'd like to share with you. I have a hairbrush made of wood and some of my favorite makeup brushes that I'd love to show you if that's okay.
Yes, please.
It's wonderful. I love this one. This one is a blush brush. It's got a wooden handle.
Yeah.
each individual bristle as it grazes my skin. Scarf that I can show you.
So that was Amanda Wallace from Whisper Lodge. So we have a couple questions for you, Amanda. Could you talk a little bit about what you were just doing and what ASMR is?
Yeah, so ASMR stands for Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response. Autonomous because it happens to your body involuntarily. Sensory, pertaining to your senses. Meridian, because it often stems from the spine. It's a feeling that goes right down the middle of your body and response. I do a immersive theater show called Whisper Lodge. That's a ASMR sensory spa experience. So that was an example of something you might find in one of the scenes, particularly the boudoir scene in Whisper Lodge.
Can you talk a little bit about the subjective experience of ASMR and how people describe it? I mean, I'm wondering if anyone listening felt something or has been primed to feel it before, but maybe you could cue people in.
Yeah. So people describe it as a pleasant tingling sensation. Often that occurs at the top of your head, down your neck, down your spine. Be a fuzziness or a tickle or like a sparkling feeling. And it's always described as something pleasant and calming, but also a bit exciting at the same time.
So what are some common triggers for it?
So the most common trigger is soft speaking and whispering. The next would be hairbrushing, I'd say. A lot of people will have experienced it for the first time just out in the world, and often the first time people feel it is getting their hair done, where they get a head massage or they're getting their hair cut. And yeah, that's an easy way to identify it.
Yeah, in my own research about it, I guess there's not much scientific consensus about what causes it and what the subjective experience is, other than, you know, the self-reported things that are, you know, as you describe. There is speculation, though, that, as you're saying, like, the second most common trigger is known to be grooming, mm-hmm. or situations involved with providing care, mm-hmm. and they've speculated that in primates is an evolutionary response that facilitates social bonding. So, you know, when monkeys will groom each other and pick for bugs, it's less about the grooming and more about a social bonding.
Mm-hmm. It's the comfort that you get from feeling cared for.
Yeah.
Like you're being protected or that you have loved ones around, and so you feel more relaxed because you feel comforted, protected. A lot of it is very maternal,
yeah.
That we tap into, at least in Whisper Lodge. A lot of things that we found were triggers came from memories of our childhood, that of nice moments where we were being taken care of.
It is like having your sister brush your hair.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, with Whisper Lodge, could you walk us through what, like, the sequence of events would be with that, you know, how you encounter your guests and, you know, every step that's gone through in this experience?
Yeah, so we always start by having our guests meet at a point outside of our venue. It's usually a very small group, between 3 and 10 people. And they're greeted by one of our guides who gives them a preparation talk about what to expect, make sure there are some guidelines set about consent and making sure everyone feels safe. And then the rest of our guides come out and we blindfold each guest and lead them through the street. ask them to really tune in their senses and start to listen to the sounds of the busy street around them. And it's actually a little bit of a scary experience being blindfolded and led around New York City. So it takes a lot of trust as you lead them inside.
Exactly. It sounds like there's a huge amount of trust involved, and that it's almost like it's a ritual, you know, where you meet them in a public space and have to
initiate them.
And travel into some private space through like a ritual facilitated by trust.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that normal that there is a transition between some kind of public sphere and some private sphere in how you use or tune to triggers?
Well, in Whisper Lodge, we found that to be really important. It's quite a leap of faith, and you have to be very vulnerable to let someone do this. So it's our way of kind of cracking open the trust. ASMR, I would say, is most popularly experienced through YouTube videos, and with that you're going from a screen to the person, and so there's a barrier there, so they're two different things.
Now we welcome Arlie Marks for some sonic mixology on air.
So could you talk a little bit about the type of space that these sort of scenarios occur in? It sounds like they are often very domestic or private settings, or especially settings where there's like care involved.
Yeah, we try and find venues that feel like a home. We often do them in real homes because it seems to be very familiar and comfortable, and the place you take your shoes off and feel like you can really let go and be yourself. And
and the scenarios themselves, so you know, when you stage a scenario for ASMR, what are typical of the scenarios?
They often involve personal attention, so the clinic is a very popular one. People seem to find that situation very relaxing, where you're at a doctor's office, but nothing invasive is being performed. It's just someone checking out your ears or using a flashlight to examine you. And
it sounds like those boundaries are pretty important about, especially invasiveness. I mean you have to establish trust for one, but it also sounds, from what we talked about so far in the leading up to this show, that there has to be a sort of established boundaries, especially about like sexual contact. And you mentioned that there's a contract you guys have to sign, right?
Yeah.
Participants have to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we let them know that this is a safe space for them. We'll only touch them if they allow it and consent, and it's also a safe space for us, and they need to be cautious about their contact with us and make sure everyone is comfortable at all times.
Yeah, I mean, beyond legal considerations about, you know, liability and whatnot, do you think establishing that type of safety is actually a prerequisite for being able to be comfortable enough to access ASMR?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. You have to feel safe. You have to feel like what is happening is okay and something that you want, and have an expectation. I think setting an expectation of what is going to happen is a big part of experiencing ASMR. So much of it is just really simply stating what you're about to do, which yeah. I think is why people like the doctor's office, because a doctor will often say, hey, I'm going to look at your ear. Like, don't worry, this isn't going to hurt.
And in order to get into some of those examples, can you sort of walk us through, so where you've sort of brought us inside from mm-hmm. outside to the house, or like saying that this is yeah. something that Whisper Lodge would do. But can you just sort of paint that picture a little bit further for us of how, what those scenarios are, mm-hmm. what you're referring to there as the clinic and what the other ones are?
So once they get inside, we help them remove their shoes and lead them to, they're still blindfolded, lead them to a comfortable place to sit. And then we do a sound bath to further immerse them in this deep relaxation state. It's not a typical sound bath. We use a lot of strange ASMR sound triggers. Once that happens, everyone's instructed to remove their blindfolds, and they're given a chance to go get a sip of water, go use the bathroom, so that they're fully ready to experience the rest without interruptions. And then they're led one by one into these different rooms. So it's always a one-on-one experience from then on. We've got the clinic. We have a boudoir where you experience the makeup brushes like Emma did. We have a tailor who will measure you for a custom suit. There's a playroom where you can play with origami and a hairbrushing room, and also an office that involves a lot more coloring and then talking about the sort of philosophy of ASMR.
Can you talk about the centrality of lightness as a method for touching the expectation?
Yeah. So one common thread for ASMR triggers seems to be that they are non-threatening. So things that are hard and abrupt and fast seem to put people in a more frightened state or increase the heart rate. And that's kind of the opposite of what we're trying to do. We're trying to slow things down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I find so interesting about the contract, or so important about it. I mean, it sounds like there is this really present sexual tension with a lot of ASMR videos and about the whispering. And I think, you know, it makes me wonder if culturally we have a hard time separating sort of intimate gestures from sexuality, and that can make them, I think, uncomfortable. And the contract's interesting to me because it seems to explicitly state that this is not a sexual thing and establish that off the bat so that these gestures can be taken in a non-aggressive way, or non-threatening way. And that's what's very interesting about it to me, about establishing trust.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's very interesting to me. So, I mean, could you talk about that sexual tension? Because it is leveraged, it seems, a little bit in a lot of popular ASMR content on the internet.
I know, it seems, it's funny because there is a study that I saw on the ASMR University site where they tested this with subjects, and most of them did not report an increase in sexual arousal. Although the popular opinion, I mean, there's definitely something that seems sexual or, I think it's intimate and not sexual, but it can be. Some people do watch it for that reason, but it doesn't have to be.
It's built around suggestiveness, you know, and within that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know if it's about suggestiveness or just being intimate, and I don't necessarily think those things always go together. Yeah, they don't have to be.
But there is a part of like the actual, like naming of ASMR, mm-hmm. right? That Jennifer Allen in 2016.
So at first this was being spoken about on forums online, and they were trying to find a word for it. They were calling it a weird tingling sensation. The idea of attention-induced head orgasm was thrown out, but people wanted to be cautious because this can be used as a wellness, healing, calming tool, and there's a lot of stigma that comes from it being labeled as something sexual that makes it harder to just use it casually for anxiety or for helping you go to sleep. So that's why they went with something a little more clinical, like autonomous sensory meridian response.
Mm. But it is really, it's fascinating, this distinction between, I think, sexuality and intimacy and, I mean, lightness also, and what that means in terms of, you know, the interaction and wholeness of different bodies. Like, if we just think of each other as sort of containers or, you know, this undulating skin or whatever, that the light touch is always something that's saying, hey, you're there and I'm here, but we're still different, but we share this feeling. And that's like, I mean, even I was just trying to look at what the etymology of intimacy itself, because it has obviously the in it.
Yeah.
And maybe the timacy, like a kind of touching in some ways. But I don't know, that's fascinating to me. It's it like seems to me ASMR is like such a powerful theory of empathy, right?
Yeah.
Of feeling in somebody rather than feeling literally in somebody else with a light touch, rather than while remaining outside of them.
Yeah. It certainly had that effect. I mean, as you used the brushes to contour my face, certainly returned me to the feeling of being at the edge of my body and within it, and made me think of life drawing, the activity of life drawing as well, and which Carolee Schneemann described as being permeated by the consequence of dimensionality that surrounds you. So.
Yeah, something I know that you and I have talked about is, apropos to this conversation about distinguishing intimacy from sexuality, trying to find or conceive of intimate settings that don't somehow involve sexuality, and that, you know, or, you know, and mirror conversation or language in that way. I mean, I've talked before about how tennis feels that way. It's this incredibly sort of nonverbal, but drawn out experience you have with someone that's very physical and decidedly not sexual, but feels nonetheless extremely intimate. And you've talked about how performing music with other people, as you're also a musician, is like that. Do you think that the theater of ASMR is a way to sort of like almost, not train people, but but prime people to be able to experience intimacy in times when there's normally sexual tension, but, you know, allow them to feel that intimacy nonetheless, you know, without that threat of like sexual invasion.
Yeah, yeah, it's almost like a rehearsal for life, or it can be seen as that, because it's showing you a way that this can happen, and you can, two people can experience pleasure together without the guilt or, I don't know, all of the things, the weight of it being sexual.
Yeah, or the fear of having to say no, you know, when you don't, when that's like actually quite a difficult thing.
I mean, also building on that, I was curious if you know if there's any way that ASMR has been used for in like with autistic interaction in terms of like empathy and forms of empathy and social connection.
I don't. Yeah, that would be a really interesting application to try and enhance those senses to feel more empathy for that. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
some people are very, you know, averse to these little sounds and things. Yeah. So I guess it would be person to person, but that would be a great use for it.
Have you had any deaf or blind persons attend Whisper Lodge events?
Yeah, I haven't personally been there, but in Los Angeles, their last show, they had interpreters so that the deaf were able to experience it in the full way as well.
That must be an interesting encounter.
Yeah.
In helping to kind of push ASMR beyond itself.
Yeah, and it's also beautiful. I mean, I think signing is such a beautiful, triggering dance.
And one subgenre of ASMR video is of hand dances, right? So.
Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, just at the risk of revealing how little I know about American Sign Language, is there a way of signing that reflects like the gentleness of whispering?
I'm not an expert in this, but I would imagine doing the movements they're softer.
Yeah, I know that there are a lot. I mean, the levels of intensity vary so greatly within sign language. If anything, it's more articulated than with verbal language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so I would imagine it would be a smaller, gentler movement.
Yeah.
Staying within the world of the stimuli, or what you call triggers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious if you feel also, like, to what extent does a trigger need to be a familiar sound? You know, does it need to be something, be it a sound or, like, you're calling it haptic, haptics in a larger sense. Is it something that we have to have heard, even if we don't recognize it, that it's something that we have heard in the past and maybe don't remember in some ways?
I think it can go two ways. You can get the comfort from it being familiar, such as the hairbrushing sound, but we also do a lot of these blindfolded situations where you don't know what is making the sound, and that's kind of magical as well, because you just find pleasure in this strange sound, and you don't have to think about it because you know you're in a non-threatening situation.
But do you feel like that the sound is, you know, that one is deriving pleasure from it being displaced, as in like them, you know, saying, oh, it sounds like that, it could be this, or is it more like, oh my God, I've never heard that thing before, you know, which would be much more of like a sublime experience in some ways, like, I've never heard this kind of sound before, where a lot of them seem to be like, oh, that's kind of like this and that, and that makes this sound like this.
I'm not sure if the surprise is so much of it, it's more of, a lot of it tends to be very repetitive, and almost like you're going into a trance, like a hypnotic, repetitive sound, like tapping a box for hours. I will listen to that, and I'm not really thinking about what is happening, the actual box tapping. It's just something to kind of let my mind stop focusing.
What other characteristics can you think of that like sort of shape triggers? Like, is there, when you were doing the brushing with Emma, I was thinking like, there has to be a lot of something, right? Mm-hmm. And same with our fingers, like there have to be at least two or at least one that's tapping a lot,
mm-hmm.
but maybe one of many in some ways.
Yeah, I think something that is sustained, like a sound that goes for a long time, so you kind of get in, you know what to expect, you know what's coming. I know, like when I was brushing up and down your fingers, I try and get into a pattern mm-hmm. so that you can relax mm-hmm. and you know what's coming. Yeah, things that are soft and rumbly, boomy. I think it really varies from person to person, too.
Yeah.
I know some people like eating sounds, and some people hate them. So.
I hate them.
What do you, as I was, you know, your subject, or was gauging how much I should respond
mm-hmm.
or acknowledge. I mean, certainly acknowledge, but felt like there was a lovely level of nonverbal communication and
yeah.
symbiosis.
I also think for some people it might be harder to experience it in person because they really like the privacy of being on the other side of a screen where nothing is yeah. asked mm. of you and mm. you are, you know, you
yeah.
nothing, no one is judging your reactions.
Yeah.
You can just be
yeah, it's
alone with your experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's both private and trusted as a situation.
Hmm.
So for people who are more experienced with the ASMR sensation and sort of, you know, can identify it and maybe slip into it easier than others, would you say that the cognitive awareness of being in a situation oriented around care is enough to induce ASMR, or does it always have to be mediated by a pretty visceral sensory experience? Like, do you know of mm-hmm. ASMR situations that are triggered more from just like an awareness of a type of the type of the situation?
Yeah. Oh, there's all different kinds. There, you can induce ASMR just from focusing or meditating, or it can just happen completely on its own. Like, I remember I was sitting in a courtroom once and people started, it was very quiet, and then all of a sudden there was this fluttering of papers all around me, and it was a huge trigger for me, and that had nothing to do with care or
yeah.
like a, anything about the content of the situation. What?
It was many of something.
Yeah, yeah, it was many, many papers like fluttering all around me.
Gluey globules, a sort of northern mimosa, fog belt mimosa. This is a water plant, atmospheric water. Leaves like propeller blades and fruit like viscous pearls. Tapioca swelling in the mist. Gluey starch, globs, amphibious vegetable. Algae afloat in shoals of mist. Pea soup, vapor trails. Shipwrecks snagged to the branches of trees at the low water level of December fogs. Francis Bond.
Around the time that it was being written about on blogs mm-hmm. and sort of shared in that way, do you see that there's some, in its base in a certain way, in its foundation, some relationship to the kinds of rupture and communication or the kinds of communication that are made by internet culture
mm-hmm.
or by, you know, we were saying YouTube videos, like the kind mm-hmm. of intimacy of a YouTube video, but also the safeness of a YouTube video.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm kind of curious about, like, you know, there's a lot of things that we associate with that. Like, to what degree is one
contingent? Contingent.
Contingent. Yeah, exactly. To what degree are people contingent to each other?
Mm-hmm.
And how ASMR has been, because you're doing ASMR live,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But its origin, in a certain way, is mediated, but largely by the internet.
Well, the origin, at least, that, like, through which it's been identified.
Right.
Although people.
It.
Yeah, exactly. Through which it's been named and identified. Whereas, you know, at least in our speculation, that primates experience it when they groom each other. It's been going on for millions of years.
Yeah, I think it's something that has probably always existed, but people weren't able to identify it until we gave it a name.
So and it's more that the forum was a forum for consensus on something rather than a part of the mediating structure.
I think so. Mm. I know, at least for me, I probably had this my whole life, but once I started doing this show, I feel the trigger. I feel ASMR so much more because I'm paying attention to it, because I have all of these experiences I can relate to and think about. So I think, the people being able to talk about it on the internet and YouTube as a place where it can exist so freely, and it's accessible by so many people that probably, that's more people probably say they experience it now because there's more ways to experience
it.
Yeah, it's interesting that something that, I don't know, people lament so often that the internet is an alienating thing, but it's interesting to me that it, as a technology of communication and organization, has put many people back in touch with an experience that most people can't identify, or I don't know, haven't been able to talk about. Hmm. You know, so I don't know. It's interesting as a way to put us in touch with each other, just about bodily experiences.
Yeah,
and in terms of, I mean, it's so much founded upon object activation. Mm-hmm. The objects that you use, are they mainly analog objects, not digital ones? And so there is this tension, it feels, between the digital media of, say, YouTube, which often serves to isolate ASMR, and then the essentially analog or pre-modern nature of the objects used.
When we're picking triggers, they're almost entirely analog objects. I mean, one thing is just because if it's technology, there's a lot more things that could go wrong. It's just harder to control. You have to plug it in or something.
Maybe on that note, we can, because we have 20 minutes left, we could actually do some stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, one common trigger is the sound of drawing on paper. So I'm wondering if you guys want to do a drawing experiment.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it would involve...
No.
You're kicked out.
Yeah,
it would
go
involve
away.
All three of you.
Breaking the contract.
So let me grab a note.
Thank you.
Oh, I read crayon, like Gilka.
So how I imagine this working, this is a new experiment. One person is going to be drawing. One person's face is going to be touched. And the face toucher will be blindfolded, and you'll be describing to the drawer how to draw the other person's face. Mm. So triggers all around. So who...
I'll touch my face.
I'll draw.
You have to touch someone else's face. Oh, no, you have to touch your own face.
So you'll be touching Aaron's face and then describing to Emma how to draw his face.
Oh, dear.
But you have to have your eyes closed, so you have to be describing it from how you feel it.
Yeah, I want to interject for a second and say that one of the most interesting descriptions I've heard of ASMR is audio-haptic synesthesia, which is, I mean, I guess biased towards, you know, people who can hear, but that, like, through primarily auditory sensations, you can induce a physical experience of touch.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Let's see.
All right, so I think that the first thing I have to tell you is where to start, I guess.
Yeah, it works.
So, I'm trying to think if I should, how I just should go about describing this. Soft dimple. Small. 1 centimeter. A long, curving ridge. Something like mountain ridge where all the mountains have been pushed up. With little directional fuzzers. Receding, springy sphere. With loose, lots of loose skin around it that you can pinch. And another ridge, but rounder, to the left of it. Sort of bony and oily. With a little rubber button at the bottom. That feels very, very squidgy and full. And then it's squidgy and full and hard and oily on one side, and it's sort of empty on the inside.
I emptied it out before I got here.
And it, below it is like a garden. of like hay in fall. And then some squidgy part again, but long and squidgy, that seems to have something hard behind it, something incredibly harder than anything else we had found. And it keeps sliding away from me, the squidgy, and there's something else there. There's something animal that has its own. And as a general thing, there's kind of like in the center a sort of sharpness down the center. Well, in the sides, there seems to be many more pockets. And it's symmetrical. And there's kind of like, when you're making like sand into a mound, with between your thumb and your index finger, you always end up with this thing in the middle. This sort of like the peak. Do you have room on your paper still?
Mm-hmm.
So I think I found where I was before with the squidgy, and I got scared away by something. Oh my god. We misread this quote before, but I really want to find it again, the Rilke. Yeah, there's something coming out of the squidgy. So there's the squidgy part and like this hard, these kind of hard things that you can rub against, like you feel like you, kind of when you're running your hand against a fence.
Oh yeah.
And making sound. You can move the squidgy along those. On the other side, there's another. Everything kind of gets soft at the bottom and then disappears. It's sort of like. Everything is like the size of a bowl. And it's almost like a sec, you know, that like sand mound. There's like a secondary mound at the bottom.
It's the blind man in the dark room looking for the black cat that isn't there.
Yes, you can.
Can I see? Oh, wow. You look like a bird. It's kind of amazing.
Can you draw this with your eyes closed?
Yes.
Oh. Amanda, can I see yours?
Yeah. I started midway through.
Well, that looks like Aaron a lot. Looks like Aaron is a sailor.
I'll try to translate the drawing that I made into words. Probably looks a little more like a torso than a face. Or a torso overlaid with the stubble of a beard.
Just like
squidgy,
my actual
squidginess
face.
And mounds.
Just like your actual face.
several chins. A little like the seams on a jacket. There's a strong collarbone. And a sense of upwardness. Loose strokes.
Did you think that I was on his face the whole time?
Face up to say the shoulders.
You imagined like a bust.
I did.
I think I stayed on your face the whole time.
Yeah. I was licking your finger, by the way. That's what
I figured. Yeah.
That was terrifying. It didn't feel like you made it up to the top of his head, why I was waiting.
Can I read something?
Yeah.
But I can't actually decide which one I want to read. Bodies aren't some kind of fullness or filled space. Space is filled everywhere. They are open space. Implying, in some sense, a space more properly spacious than spatial, what could also be called a place. Bodies are places of existence, and nothing exists without a place, a there, a here is, for this. The body place isn't full or empty, since it doesn't have an outside or an inside, any more than it has parts. A totality, functions, or finality. It's acephalic and aphalic, in every sense, as it were. Yet it is a skin variously folded, refolded, unfolded, multiplied, invaginated, exogastrulated, orificed, evasive, invaded, stretched, relaxed, excited, distressed, tied, untied. And these and a thousand of other ways the body makes room for existence.
Huge thank you to Amanda Wallace and Arlie Marks for their guest appearances on this episode of Tongue in Cheek Tingle. We'll see you next time. This is Patrick Higgins in Sotto Voce, reading Beethoven's Heilige Dankesan with a cigarette.
And Andante. It is August the 21st, 2018. This is the Heilige Dankesang, as read through a smoked cigarette. This has been a partial reading of the Heilige Dankesang through a cigarette prior to gaining new strength and finishing the movement.